ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chapter 18 texts. We'll cover 4 verses today, I think. 9, 10, 11. Excuse me, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Sutta has been speaking about topics of Krishna. This was asked in the 7th chapter. The beginning of the 7th chapter, we find Vyasa having his mystic realization of the personality of Godhead. There are certain verses that describe what that vision was. Based upon that vision, he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, which is all about the topics of Krishna. Then the statement is there, even Shukadeva Goswami, who was beyond material attraction, became attracted. The sages ask, how is this? He had no interest in going studies, learning something he's already realized. Can you explain? And they explain the Atmaranda Sloka. And so from that point, the sages then, in a very excited way, request Sutta to speak on this realization of Vyasa, his topics of the personality of Godhead. And from that point on, in the 7th chapter, topics about the Pandavas. And it meanders in a number of different ways. But here we are in chapter 18, it's still the topics of the descendant of the Pandavas, Maharaj Parikshit, on the same theme. And as that 7th chapter statement appears, that the topics about the Pandavas are not different than the topics of Krishna, same statement is made here in the 18th chapter. O sages, as you did ask me, I have now described almost everything regarding the narrations about Lord Krishna in connection with the history of the pious Maharaj Parikshit. And Prabhupada repeats what he says in the 7th chapter. So repetition is sometimes necessary for clear understanding. So Krishna repeats, or Sutta repeats, and Prabhupada in the purport also repeats. The activities of the Lord are performed in relation with the devotees of the Lord. Therefore, the history of the devotees is not different from the history of Lord Krishna. A devotee of the Lord regards both the activities of the Lord and those of his pure devotees on an equal level. That's not to say the devotees are Krishna. The jiva becomes Vishnu. It's not an impersonal statement. It's a statement of they're on the same level. They're on the transcendental level. The devotee becomes on the transcendental level because of contact with the Lord, who is always on the transcendental level. Very logical, right? And therefore, Krishna Katha includes the description of Maharaj Parikshit. Krishna Katha includes Mahabharata. Wait a minute, what about all those battles and things and Gandhi wrote, not just said, but he wrote in his whatever, you know, commentaries or revelations on Bhagavad Gita that Krishna never exists, the battle of Kurukshetra never existed, and if my Hinduism depends upon the fact that Krishna incited Arjuna to fight a real battle in Kurukshetra, I give up my Hinduism. I think you should have read Prabhupada's books. Because, or even Srimad Bhagavatam. that the topics in relation to the devotees of the Lord, that the within the Bhagavatam, within the 15th chapter, I guess it is, when Arjuna comes back to Hastinapur, he's recalling all of the glorious things that happened in his life. And he attributes those glorious things as the vibhutis of Krishna. What are vibhutis? Vibhutis are opulences in this world that give us a hint of the opulences of Krishna in the spiritual world. They're reflections of his... He's Bhagavan, and he arranges his external energies to display themselves. And some among those external energies, there's excellences, vibhutis, that just like a reflection of light. And Krishna is not only light, but he's the source of light. So Arjuna recognizes these vibhutis, these decorations of extraordinary prowess that were given to him. It's Krishna! And he's appreciating his relationship with Krishna in terms of Krishna bestowing those amazing things. Kunti, I'm building a case here. Kunti, she also understands. Same thing. Krishna. He put us in dangers. He rescued us from dangers. It's all Krishna's doing. We're your devotees. We're like the Prabhupada. When he came to America and he wrote that very wonderful poem, I'm a puppet. You can make me dance as you like. I'm your surrendered servant. I'm here only because you brought me here. I don't see how it's possible to do what you want me to do. But if you want me to do it, you can make me do it. So I pray to you that you empower my speech in such a way these people filled with ignorance and passion can understand transcendental goodness. Because otherwise it's not going to be possible. Prabhupada was successful because he was Krishna Shakti Vina Nahitara Pravartana, directly empowered by Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita says that you cannot even induce another person to act, to chant the holy name, without being empowered by Krishna to do so. So what to speak of someone who induces many people to chant the Hare Krishna mantra? Where does that ability come from? Where does that potency come from? That's not, in that case, that's not a vibhuti. That's spiritual, direct spiritual potency. There's a difference. Direct spiritual potency. Devotees of the Lord understand that. It's a relationship with Krishna, and Krishna decorates. He likes to decorate, just like Prabhupada's statement of decorating the deity. Maybe you've heard this one, but it's nice to hear it again and again. The pujari who decorates the deity, thinking, this is a very nice ornament, these are very nice flowers, this is very nice cloth, this is very nice... string this on, this is nice for the deity. By decorating the deity, one is decorating oneself. He gives the example just like if you decorate yourself, your face in the mirror, the reflection in the mirror is also decorated. Here's the face, and we're the reflection. We're being decorated by decorating Krishna. Krishna doesn't need decorations. He appreciates the love and devotion. He doesn't need anything. But it's a statement of our love and devotion, and one who opens their heart with love and devotion becomes decorated. And those who are devotees understand that's what's going on. It's not, I did it, I achieved it. Ta-da. Devotees don't think that way. They don't think in false ego. They're not in competition with others because they're not in competition with Krishna. Those that are in competition with Krishna that life is filled with competition with others. It is endless. Because with Krishna, you never win. And therefore, with others, it may be sometimes like arm wrestling. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. The world of duality. The whole platform is a platform of losing because you lost your relationship with Krishna. Very, very simple. So, the description of the glories of Maharaj Parikshit is Krishna Katha. He hasn't been asked one question and not answered the question and gone off in some other direction. He's answered the question. Please describe Krishna Katha, the subject of that literature which Vyasa was enjoined, instructed to write by Narada. Here it is. The wonderful activities of Maharaj Parikshit. Because, so the next verse then explains not only that it's Krishna Katha, but specifically how by this katha, the katha of Maharaj Parikshit or the Pandavas, how we can understand the nature of Krishna. Because the nature of Krishna is not just that he's the creator of the material world and he sits in the spiritual world and plays his flute. He directly reciprocates with those devotees who are in this world serving him. He's a very instant response, loving personality. And by examining very carefully the lives of these great personalities, one can understand the nature of Krishna. If you can understand the nature of Krishna, guess what? No more birth and death. Right? Janma karma chame divyam evam yoviti tatvataha chakvadeham purnar janma naiti mameti sorjana. Is it valuable for you to spend years and 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 years of education to prepare for the later stages of your life so that you can have a proper occupation? Certainly it's sensible to do that. Is it also sensible to invest comparable, if not superable, amounts of energy in preparing for eternal life? And this subject matter, Srimad Bhagavatam, is designed by the author Vyasadeva specifically to provide that subject matter. Just by regular attendance in the Bhagavatam class. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. It becomes Bhavati, just voila. Just manifests. Just from this hearing. What kind of bhakti? Naishtaki bhakti. Continue. Nashtaprayeshu avadreshu. Just by this hearing. We could do, you know, some greater austerities. How it hurts. And whatever, whatever, whatever. But this is the prescription. This Vyasa is the physician and he's prescribing this medicine for the age of Kali. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and the unwanted things, they disappear. Bhakti awakens. Bhakti parishano bhavo viraktir anyatracha. You know that sloka. By the process of hearing, three things happen. Bhakti awakens. Attraction for the personality of Godhead manifests. A detachment from other things. Those are the three. Bhakti, paraisha anubhav, viraktir anyatra cha. who just come for Aarti and Bhagavatam class regularly, and seriously apply yourself. Don't just punch the clock and punch out when you leave. You give attention to the subject matter. And this is the outcome. Very nice. Those who are desirous of achieving complete perfection in life must submissively hear all topics that are connected with the transcendental activities and qualities of the personality of Godhead who acts wonderfully. Sutta saying this to the sages of Naimisharanya. I've now completed the background. He's going to move on to the next thing about Maharishi Parikshit getting ready to leave the world. But I now described almost in full, in codes at least, the activities and glories of Maharishi Parikshit. One who hears these with rapt attention is eligible to achieve spiritual perfection. Prabhupada writes in the purport, systematic hearing of the transcendental activities, qualities, names of Lord Sri Krishna pushes one towards eternal life. Systematic hearing means knowing him gradually in truth and fact. And knowing him in truth and fact means attaining eternal life, as is stated in Bhagavad Gita. How you have persons that want liberation. Without this hearing and chanting process, what are their means of achieving release from material existence, factually? There's the mechanical tyagi approach. But supposing you cut the connections with this material world, where's the connection with the spiritual world? And even if there's some idea of the spiritual world as this state of undifferentiated oneness, where the variegated dualities of this world don't exist, that's negation. But in that non-dual realm, what's the shelter that you take? What do you do there? Just twinkle, or what do you do? It's not a complete picture. It's part of what happens there. There are souls that are radiating spiritual effulgence. But what is that realm? Paravyom, spiritual sky. In that spiritual sky, there's vast, innumerable spiritual planets. In those spiritual planets, there are devotees serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, tyaga alone doesn't bring entrance into the spiritual planets. Prabhupada's very simple logic. You go in a spaceship beyond the gravitation of the earth into space. How long can you stay there? Besides, you run out of oxygen. It's just you get restless because it's not natural. What do you do there? After some time, you want to come back. Prabhupada's comments that the recordings of the cosmonauts looking out the window and seeing there is Moscow. There's an attachment for activity. It's natural that it's there because it's natural for the soul to be active. Spirit souls are active. We need activity. What is that activity? So this is describing that activity. And later in the Bhagavatam, we'll find the activities that are manifested in the kingdom of God. But those activities that are manifested in this world for the benefit of attracting the hearts and the minds of conditioned souls, that's what the Lord's Leela is. In these verses, because I've just spent some intensive time discussing Queen Kunti's prayers, it's very obvious the connection between, the parallel, I should say. It's expressed in different ways, but the message is a parallel message. That Prabhupada writes here, we'll do the Queen Kunti prayers part. Such transcendental, glorified activities of Lord Sri Krishna are the prescribed remedy for counteracting the process of birth, death, old age, and disease, which are considered to be the material awards for the conditioned living being. A material award. Thank you for being, we'd like to call so-and-so up to the stage for all of his wonderful material conditional activities. We'd like to give him an award. Death, old age, rebirth, and disease. Thank you very much. Let's have a big hand for this conditioned soul. He gets his award for plodding along the path of material life. One is awarded such things. The culmination of such a perfectional stage of life, that's the perfectional stage of life, is ending that cycle of birth and death. In that ending of the cycle of birth and death, there's a perfectional stage. This is the goal of human life and the attainment of transcendental bliss. So, in Queen Kunti's prayers, there's a cluster of verses where she states, different persons say that you've descended. You're the unborn. But you take birth. And why have you done that? Some say is to glorify various kings. Some say is to glorify Yadu, because Krishna appeared in the dynasty of King Yadu to this day. Otherwise, name Yadu would be obscure. Who cares about Yadu? Who would even know about Yadu? But because Krishna appeared in the dynasty of King Yadu, he's glorified. And various kings, specifically King Yudhisthira and the Pandavas. So we hear about Yudhisthira, we hear about Arjuna, we hear about Bhima. We hear about the members of the royal family, Queen Kunti and Draupadi. And it's not to say that other persons haven't been great personalities in the course of history, but preponderance of glorification goes to them. So Krishna's giving, he's Bhagavan. And he's distributing. He wants the attention of others to go to his devotees. So he appears as a relative of them. Some say that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, some say that you've appeared because of the prayers of Vasudeva and Devaki, their long austerities, and to satisfy their desire, you have appeared. So these are all, they're all correct. It's not this, it's gotta be one only. Krishna's expert, he does, with one thing, he does many things. So, some say that it was to fulfill the prayers and the years and years and years of austerities of Vasudeva and Devaki in their previous lives as Sutta Panprishni and Kashyapa and Aditi and now Vasudeva and Devaki. Some say it was to relieve the burden of the earth, of demoniac kings, because Lord Brahma came and he offered his prayers at the shore of the milk ocean and you heard those prayers and you agreed to make your appearance and relieve the burden of the earth. Some say that you came to teach Dharma Sangstha Panartaya. Some say that you came to teach method of devotional service, proper dharma in this age. And you did so directly through your teaching and through the example of the lives of those who came with you. Some say like that. Then she summarizes essentially all of these things and more are subject matter about the nature of Krishna. So his descent is to give us the subject matter to hear and chant about so we can achieve spiritual perfection. Long after Vasudeva and Devaki and Yadu and the Pandavas and everybody else, the demoniac kings, long after that, he came to give us the subject matter about his name, fame, qualities, pastimes, loving exchanges, so that just by these activities we can come to know the truth about Krishna. Evam yo veti tatvataha. Veti tatvataha, to know him in truth. And hearing and hearing and hearing and gradually getting purified so we can hear better. Hear really what's being said. And then truly understand. And then be relieved of birth, death, disease, and old age. But not just merging into the twinkle zone of the Brahmajyoti, but into the spiritual planets and engaged in loving exchanges with the personality of Godhead. And those who vibrate those messages is like Sutta Goswami and Shukadev Goswami and their representatives. They're doing the greatest welfare work, just like by Krishna's descending. Just descending and performing transcendental pastimes, along with the destroying of the demons and the giving of knowledge. But just because he does those things, just his descending, his mercifully descending, it's the best possible thing to do. Should Krishna, when he have come, descended to open hospitals and feed poor people and done those things, and that would have been the best welfare work? No. There's always going to be, there's duality in this world. There's the haves and the have-nots. And distribution of wealth is certainly part of a governmental function, but it's not the height of mercy and compassion and welfare work. Real welfare work is to take that person out of the cycle of birth and death. They never have to experience the have and have not position again. And representatives of the Lord, they understand that principle. There may very well be programs for massive prasad and distribution and so on. There's not a judgment that if you do that, that's good. If you don't do that, that's not good. Or vice versa. It's the focus goes to the highest welfare work, and when the highest welfare work is there, the pyramid structure follows. Naturally, good people do good things. But how to get people really to the platform of pure goodness? That's a challenge. The challenge is addressed by Krishna appearing in this world and following his appearance to have this literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, make its appearance. So in this dark age of Kali, people can get light. In the struggle for happiness and birth, death, old age, and disease, people can get permanent relief, not just limited relief. Be satisfied with your hunger today and hungry again tomorrow, for example. So he, Sutta, stops speaking for a moment. Then the sages have their turn. And the sages are so happy. Oh, Sutta Goswami. Oh, grave Sutta Goswami. May you live many years and have eternal fame. For you are speaking very nicely about the activities of Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. This is just like nectar for the mortal beings like us. Just like nectar. When Ramananda Roy is hearing Rupa Goswami recite verses from his Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava and the assembly of the Vaishnavas in Jagannath Puri, only because Lord Chaitanya insisted, because otherwise, in the presence of the elevated other associates of Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami couldn't speak. He felt himself so insignificant before their grand presence, although he, amongst them, was most exalted. He was thinking of himself as insignificant amongst this exalted assembly. His humility was retiring him from being able to speak. But Lord Chaitanya insisted. And so he spoke. And one by one, as he spoke, Ramananda Roy was examining the words, the verses. Now describe the next, and now describe the next, and now describe the invocation, and now describe. And after hearing, Ramananda Roy said, "This is not poetry. This is a shower of nectar. Transcendental nectar to put out the blazing fire of material existence. It's like a shower, pouring a shower of nectar on your head." I don't know what that means exactly, but just like, not just, no, I guess it's not just drinking some nectar, it's just bathing in nectar. Who could write such poetry unless you receive the mercy of, special mercy of Lord Chaitanya? When Lord Chaitanya acknowledges, "True, I gave him my special mercy." You've understood rightly. Vyasadeva, he's a literary incarnation of the Lord. And specifically, he's writing this literature for the age of Kali, for the purpose of giving our exclusive attention, focusing our exclusive attention upon the personality of Godhead. Oh, grave Sutta Goswami, your words are like immortal nectar for us mortals. Prabhupada describes a little bit in the purport about the transcendental nature of Krishna. We should, when we hear about Krishna, he appears in this world and he does things as if he's one of us, and persons who have not heard from proper sources think he's one of us. So he's limited like we're limited. He's bound by the rules that we're bound by. He has a material body like we do. That means he has lusty desires like we do, and he gets old like we do, and he dies like we do, and he's like one of us. You just, without transcendental knowledge, the nature of envy is to bring a person who is in the superior position down to our position, or below our position. It's the nature of envy. And one who is fixed in transcendental knowledge cannot do that with Krishna or with those intimately connected to Krishna. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, his acts are called divyam. This means that he does not act or take his birth like an ordinary living being under the custody of material energy. Nor is his body material or changeable like that of an ordinary living beings. One who understands this fact, either from the Lord or from authorized sources, is not reborn after leaving the present material body. Such an enlightened soul is admitted into the spiritual realm of the Lord and engages in transcendental service of the Lord. Such a simple thing. Is that all it takes? Must be that it's not such a simple thing. It must be that there's a very strong tendency to project upon Krishna worldliness, because that's what we're so familiar with. We're familiar with our own worldliness and the worldliness of others. Therefore, the regular cleansing of consciousness by regularly hearing transcendental topics of the Lord is imperative. the scriptures enjoin. Satatam kirtayantum yatantascha vridhavata katiyantascha mam yatam toshanticha ramanticha. We're enjoined to regularly Shrinvatasa kata krishna punya shravana kirtana vridhyantakstakipadani vidunoti saritsata. Many verses were instructed to regularly. It's not like something academic. You learn this and you go on to that. After you learn that, you go on to another thing. It's not like that. It's purification. Knowledge that brings consciousness of the soul up. It's not information processing. It's consciousness being elevated. Different kind of knowledge. Some people say, I don't like reading scriptures because it just says the same thing over and over again. I'm addressing that mentality. Then in text 12 they say, we have just begun the performance of this fruitive activity. Which means the sages had assembled in Naimisharanya, the forest of Naimisharanya. For a specific purpose, for performing Karmakanda Yajna. Because the performance of Karmakanda Yajna of different kinds is to diminish ill and invoke good influences. That's the purpose. And it can be directed. Let my son or daughter have a good husband or wife. Let my business be successful, that my undertaking of this something, whatever it is, some health, wealth, beauty, strength, something. So there's different fruitive yajnas, karmakanda yajnas, to perform, and that's what they were doing. And when that assembly had begun, well, Sutta Goswami was requested to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a little interlude before that. His father was requested to speak. Romaharshan. Romaharshan was the disciple of Vyas who was entrusted to be the caretaker for the Puranas. The four Vedas were each entrusted to different persons, disciples of Vyas. Romaharshan was entrusted with the Puranas. And he was an expert reciter. In fact, his name indicates when he would recite, his hairs would stand on end. Romaharshan. So he was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam when Balaram, who was on tour of pilgrimage places, came. You know this description, right? Yes? Anyone not know? Okay. Balaram was on tour. Balaram didn't take part in the Kurukshetra battle. He left. What he did was he went to places of pilgrimage. He was sanctifying places of pilgrimage in the name of, I'm not going to be involved in this battle. He had a higher purpose. As he was going to sanctify places of pilgrimage, he came to Naimisharanya. And when this recitation was going on, is this right? Maybe the chronology is not right. In any case, he was on pilgrimage. Because this is after the Kurukshetra battle. In any case, he came into the assembly of sages and everyone stood to receive him. It's etiquette. Except one person. Romaharshan Sutta. Romaharshan Sutta was considering on speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. So I should stay here and continue speaking Srimad Bhagavatam because it's the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not me. So Balaram could understand that there's pride in his heart. He's not qualified to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So he took a piece of kusa grass, a approached Ramaharshan Sutta, touched his heart, and immediately he died. Pierced his body with a blade of grass. Bloody mess all over the Vyasasan. And so the sages in the assembly were aghast at what they had just seen. So Balaram, I'm shortening, paraphrasing, Balaram said, what would you like me to do? I can bring him back to life. He can resume. No, you're the personality of Godhead. Whatever you've done is for some higher purpose and perfect. But what are we to do to continue our yajna and our katha? So Balaram proposed, the son of the father is representative of the father. Sutta Goswami is here, the son of Ramaharshan. And he also heard Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. He was in that assembly. Let him speak. So they accepted, and Sutta began speaking. That is described much later. But in the beginning, it's just Sutta and the sages. So the sages had begun by this Karmakanda Yajna. And what they're saying here is, our bodies have become black from the smoke. What benefit were we getting? Zip. The only thing that was happening is our bodies were becoming black by the smoke. That's not a benefit. There was no benefit. In the age of, so in the purport, Prabhupada explains, in the age of Kali, this Karmakanda procedure is not effective and forbidden because it's not effective. And the reason it's not effective is you have to have qualified Brahmins to perform those yajnas. Chant the mantras and do the rituals without the spiritual qualification. No effect other than smoke and getting their bodies blackened by the smoke. It's a statement from the Srimad Bhagavatam that Karmakanda is not meant for this age of Kali. It does exist in previous ages, and people to this day, they still do Karmakanda rituals. Plentiful. But if they would refer to the scriptures, they would understand it's not effective. But for those that have the brahminical status, and they know the mantras, although they don't have the spiritual qualification, that's their livelihood. They don't like to stop. They don't want to go to what is recommended for the sage of Kali, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and reciting Bhagavatam. They want to continue with Karmakanda rituals. And people like rituals. They like giving gobs and gobs of money to do the rituals. It's a social spectacle. They derive satisfaction to the social dynamic of the thing. And the sense of getting piety and, you know, the things that they want and the removal of the things they don't want as a result. It's a material desire incentive and prestige and social satisfaction at the same time. Scripturally, this verse, text 12 in chapter 18, is indicating that it's not effective. The whole of the Bhagavatam is indicating that this is a specific reference. They're saying, these are the sages, it's not just like the people on the street. These weren't the people who were sponsoring yajnas, they're the yajna performers. We're saying we were getting no benefit from this Karmakanda yajna until you came. And now that you've come, we're realizing the not only the benefit of material enhancing the dynamic of the age of Kali, but we're getting the opportunity for spiritual perfection. So thank you. You rescued us from that, and you've given us much more than we even anticipated. Our bodies have become black from the smoke, but we are factually pleased by the nectar of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, Govinda, which you are distributing, which is a pronoun. He's distributing the lotus feet. He's distributing the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead through these messages. What does that mean? The lotus feet are accessed by the mood of service. Taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, or praying to the lotus feet of the Lord, means coming to the mood or position of service in a humble state of mind, coming to serve the Lord. That's achieving the lotus feet of the Lord. The right conception of who is the Lord, the mood of humble service unto the Lord, that's achieving his lotus feet. And you're so kindly distributing that. We just wanted to, like, make conditions on this planet less harsh. You gave us more than that. You have a pyramid. If you're at the top of the pyramid, the other parts of the pyramid are also going to be there. The beneficial influences for common people in this age, as the previous verses are explaining, it's automatically taken care of. When you have $1 million, you solve your $10 and $100 problems. Those that have the perfection of life, it's not that they're callous to what common people are undergoing. It's not so. Not so. They're far more understanding what is the cause behind the problem of the common people in this world. They know the remedial measure. They want to administer the remedial measure. And common people of the world say, what are you doing to help people? Prabhupada writes in Isha Upanishad, it's a great misfortune that things have come to the stage where those who are transcendentalists are valued, or spiritually positioned individuals are valued at how much philanthropy and altruism they perform. That's a government function. Receive taxes from the people and hold it as emergency, and you distribute the emergency things. That's a government function. It's a Kshatriya function. It's not a Sadhu function. Or Brahminical function. But, religious organizations have become social service organizations in the eyes of the public. They're valued to the degree that they do that. Specifically on the bodily platform. That's unfortunate. It's a great misfortune. It doesn't mean, going the other direction, it doesn't mean that persons who are spiritually situated are callous to or don't do anything when emergencies arise. They do, because they're compassionate. But that's not their primary function. It's not their primary value in society. Moving about society, finding out what their social problems and dealing with those social problems, and that's what a spiritual person is supposed to do. It's a wrong idea. Unfortunate, wrong idea. In common, on the street, as they say, and the common people, that's their expectation. During our yatra in Mayapur, we have huge halls for serving prasadam. So I sat down to take prasadam after one of our days going out for pilgrimage, and one wealthy man, pious man, sat next to me. And he started asking, how long have you been with this Krishna consciousness organization? I said, 35 years. And can you tell me what you are doing to help people? And I said, well, I think what you mean is, I knew what he meant, but I think what you mean is things like philanthropy, right? Yes, he said, you have all these buildings. What is that doing to help people? A big display of opulence, and it's a lot to manage. And it's nice to credit that you've built them, but what are you doing to help people? He said, do you see that spiritual value, replacing once again spiritual value in life and providing a resource to do that for people all over is helping people? And he went into this thing, well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, helping people means da-da-da. He didn't hear the question. He didn't respond to the question. He just, you know, so I explained this visa thing that we're doing on that platform. I said, oh, very good. Very good. Keep up the good work. So that's called public relations, which isn't the essence of our work. We don't do those things for the sake of, quote, public relations. We do them because they're part of what our life is. We're in this world, and you can't see somebody that's, you know, requiring something, and you have something to do nothing. But then there's the deeper understanding why you're in why are they in that condition? Does it change their condition? You give them something. They still have their karma. Still have their, what they, the impiety, or they're turning their attention away from Krishna mentality. And they're going to do more of the same, which is going to perpetuate their condition. What about that? It's deeper. And the Bhagavatam addresses that. It's the medicine. To turn attention again to Krishna. And awaken this shelter taking of the lotus feet of the Lord. Circumstance. Prabhupada quotes towards the end of the purport. In Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Vishnu tells Lord Shiva that in the age of Kali, men full of anxieties of various kinds can vainly labor in fruitive activity and philosophical speculations, but when they are engaged in devotional service, the result is sure and certain, and there is no loss of energy. In other words, nothing performs for spiritual realization or material benefit can be successful without devotional service of the Lord. This is the Bhagavatam's message. Whatever it is, must be joined with devotional service. Without devotional service, it's a downward spiral. The vortex is going down, and it's going down rapidly. So, get situated in devotional service. And the means of getting situated in devotional service, one of the prominent means, is hearing these wonderful topics. Then one can take those things that you have and you're cherishing and developing, and they can become an uplifting rather than a character loss sucked into the material energy situation. It's shelter from the storm of Kali Yuga, and beyond that carries one to the spiritual levels of consciousness and to the kingdom of God. Most merciful process. So the sages are appreciating with great gratitude. They're appreciating what they're receiving. They got it. Okay, so any discussion? 5 minutes before 7:30. I intended this to be a shorter class, but I got carried away, I guess. Anything?
to keep.
Okay.